The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
For those of you who are students of history, as much of history as we can really get our hands on, because so much of it is written by the winners, and it's all lies. It's lies. It's corrupted beyond belief in so many ways. We came very close in World War II to having an entirely different planet, a planet which would not be enslaved by the money controllers. It would be far different. And all the negative PR that was generated by the Brits, the Americans, the Russians against Germany in World War II is like Mount Everest. It's nonstop. It's ingrained in people. And I could only suggest that if you really want to know history, you really should get the DVD set, The Greatest Story Never Told. Everyone who has seen it raves about it. My God, how did they hide all this from us? How little we know. World War II. Could it have gone the other way? Maybe. It was tough. You got a country the size of Texas taking on the world. And that's what it was about. It's a very complicated story, and to try to get to the root of the reality of what happened from 1940 to 1945 and thereafter, you have to really do some serious looking. And there are very few people that I trust about honesty and terms of World War II, not to mention ancient history. And that's Frank Joseph. And Frank has a new book out, The Turning Points of World War II. And they're fascinating. I did see a documentary once, How Hitler Lost the War. And the interesting part of that documentary to me was the video clips of some of the remarkable people. Adolf Galland was featured prominently, and so many others. It was really, really remarkable. Could Germany have won the war? I don't know. When you have treason being committed at the highest level in and around you, if you are the leader of a country, it becomes very difficult. In this country, our entire government is now committing treason against all of us. And I will again repeat, think of the 1,500 U.S. military sent to the Tex-Mex or otherwise U.S.-Mexican border. You say, oh boy, they're going down there to stop the invasion. No, they went down there under orders to help the invasion. That's highest treason. They all take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. They went down there and they are actually bringing in our own mortal enemies. And I do believe that this is very well planned. I do believe there are many locations around the country that have possibly Costco shipping containers or others full of weapons, weaponry, you name it. From AKs to RPGs, I don't care. All kinds of things. And there may well be some nukes here in this country. So don't be surprised. Frank Joseph, standing by to spend some time with us to talk about his book. Hello, Frank. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be with you and your informed listeners. So let's see what we can give them this evening.
All right. I did. Someone recently reminded me about someone in the German government at a very high level who was a mole or a duplicitous traitor. And, yeah, we did mention that a little bit. We talked about that slightly. But I think that's a very important key to this mystery of what really happened there. That's part of it. And the loss of Heydrich, big loss, irreplaceable loss. So anyhow, go right ahead. This is a wonderful story in terms of real history that you're all going to get to hear now. Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting that a conflict as huge and as influential on the past as World War II really turned on two individuals, more than Hitler or Roosevelt or Stalin or any of the rest of them. And the first one you mentioned was Reinhard Heydrich. He was head of the German security staff, it's called the SD. And his opponent, and he didn't even realize who his opponent was until it was too late, was the very man that was in charge of German military intelligence. And his name was Admiral Canaris, Admiral Wilhelm Canaris. And he had made a statement, he repeated it several times when World War II began. He said that a victory for Germany is something that is intolerable and that it would be far better for all of Germany to be destroyed rather than win. This is what he actually believed.
Wow.
And he was more than a mole. Admiral Canaris was a highly skilled, highly trained and experienced military intelligence officer from before World War I. And he was a very personable guy and very winning sort of a personality, and he fooled a lot of people. And he was in such a close relationship with British intelligence that he was beyond even being just a mole. He was a British operative who was in charge of German military intelligence.
Unbelievable.
And It's unbelievable. He had achieved some terrific breakthroughs from a military intelligence point of view, overcoming the best efforts of German security. But he wasn't able to succeed because Reinhard Heydrich, who was in charge, say, of German security, he was fast on his track and was close to having him arrested and was foiling all of the plans that he had for sabotaging the German war effort. And it seems quite clear Germany was winning the war from 1939 on all the way through 1942. And no matter where they were fighting, whether on the seas, the U-boats, or fighting on the Eastern Front, the Germans were victorious everywhere. But from the moment that Reinhard Heydrich died in June, early June 1942, German fortunes changed for the worse and never returned. And that is because Admiral Canaris told his British operatives, you must assassinate this man because he is making it impossible for me to make the kind of disruptions that are necessary to send you the information ahead of time. And so they had these trained assassins who had been born and raised in Czechoslovakia, where Heydrich was headquartered, and they assassinated him. And that was the real turning point of World War II. That, actually, there's all the other turning points of whether people did the right thing or the wrong thing were totally minor compared to that. And that was the end. Strangely enough, the assassination attempt on Hitler's life in July 1944 was close to restoring German success, because when Hitler was almost killed, Admiral Canaris was exposed, was found out. All of his fellow operatives were found out. They were immediately arrested, and as it turns out, German fortunes began to take a turn for the better, with some terrific successes. But it was too late by that time. The war had gone on too long. But so the whole story of World War II boils down into a nutshell of military intelligence. The British succeeded terrifically in breaking the German military code. The German military code was with a cryptographer machine called Enigma, and it was unbreakable until Canaris, after Heydrich had been assassinated, Canaris was able to send the ciphers to British intelligence in Bletchley Park in England, and they were now able to read all of the orders and the plans that had been set up by the German High Command, literally at the same moment that they were devised, they were composed. So by the time that the German commanders in the field had all of their orders, the Allies already had those plans in front of them. It was child's play to win the war after that. I mean, it would have been impossible for them to have lost the war with this kind of a setup that was going on. This has all been exposed. There are a tremendous amount of books out that have come out about it now. It was withheld from general information while some of these men like Bernard Montgomery were still alive, because it made them look like they weren't really quite the great military geniuses they were, because all they had to do is just to read all of the intercepts that were being provided by Admiral Canaris and his fellows. And
all this talk about how the British brilliantly cracked the Enigma, it was an inside job. They must have been laughing their asses off.
It was actually an inside job, yeah. Right. The British had done a lot of great scientific work towards that end, but without the cipher keys, there was nothing they could do about it. And the last one to really hold out, interestingly enough, and again, it highlights the military intelligence aspect of the fate of World War II, was the German Navy kept changing those ciphers, and Canaris couldn't get a hold of them fast enough. So the German Navy was winning the war for Germany as late as spring 1943. The number of sinkings that were taking place, Allied sinkings, was absolutely catastrophic. And Churchill was told in March 1943 that if the U-boats attacks on the supply convoys continue at the rate that they were working at in up to the first quarter of 1943, that Britain would have no chance, no choice, rather, than to disengage from the war, to have some kind of an agreement with Germany, an armistice of some kind, because they just were not getting any supplies. The population was starving to death. The British population was literally on starvation rations. They were on the knife's edge of a famine. And Churchill informed Roosevelt this. He says, unless you can get your convoys through to us, we're going to have to disengage from the war. Now, when finally the naval codes were obtained by Canaris, he was able to dispatch them immediately to Bletchley Park, where the British cryptographers were working. And that completely changed the U-boat war around, and all the U-boats began being sunk now, one after the other, because they knew, the Royal Navy destroyers knew exactly where all the German U-boats were. The seas had become transparent. You could no longer hide under the surface of the sea. And that is how, really, the war was finally lost, was because the enemy was in possession of all of your orders, your dispositions. The war in North Africa was lost in short time because of that.
Imagine playing a football game and knowing the upcoming play of your opponent, each and every play.
Think that's exactly what it was. That's a good analogy. I mean, there's just no chance that you can score when your opposition knows everything in advance. But I think that World War II is really one of the great turning points that America went through. I think it was more than something we're told in history class, more than we learn from the standard textbooks. And I think that history is very important, Jeff, and you've brought this out numerous times, that if you have at least some kind of a grasp or an inkling of the past, it explains things that are going on in your own society. There are so many people, so many Americans now, that are thinking, how did America arrive at this point now? How is it possible that our society is unraveling so quickly in so many ways? I mean, the things that we're seeing now are appalling. It's unbelievable, the things that are happening now. How did all this happen? Well, the analogy is similar to a person that is suffering from a disease. If this person does not understand he is sick, he's been infected with some kind of a disease, eventually he'll see that the disease has caught up with him and is killing him. Then he's alarmed, but he can't understand what happened because he's too ignorant to understand that he's been sick for a very long time. And that is analogous to what our country is going through.
Yeah.
And I think that we have gone through four truly major turning points. I mean, we've gone through a lot of turning points for sure, but there are these four that I see as being absolutely crucial, and World War II is one of them. And the first one was the Civil War. I think that was the beginning of the end. I think that was the most important and disastrous turning point that the United States has ever gone through. And the reason I say that is because when the South seceded from the Union, it had every legal constitutional right to do that. And the vast majority of Americans didn't like what was happening, but they understood. Americans were knowledgeable enough about their own primary documents to see that they had the right to do that. The Declaration of Independence states that all of the states in the United States are voluntary. They form a voluntary union, and that the federal government is there only to make sure that the basic freedoms for all of the states are ensured and the states function properly. The Constitution of the United States has a 10th Amendment, and the 10th Amendment affirms the same thing, that the union is a voluntary union and can be dissolved any time that the people of a particular state want to leave it. That is the foundation of our constitutional republic.
Is that still
and when
viable?
Jefferson Davis... Oh, go ahead, yes.
Is that still viable right now? Could the state of whatever, Idaho, pull out on its own under the Constitution?
No, because of what happened in the Civil War. That cannot happen ever again. That is impossible. When Jefferson Davis was arrested at the end of the Civil War, they were going to put him on trial. That was the big thing. It was talked about for a long time. And then it was decided that he cannot be put on trial. And the reason why is because Jefferson Davis was the leading constitutional lawyer of his day, leading constitutional authority. Yeah. And they knew that his arguments, when placed on public trial, would show that the South had every legal right to secede from the Union. And so, therefore, he was not put on trial. He was released, and he was not charged. For the rest of his life, he was let go. He became a non-person, as it were. Nobody wanted to talk to him about it because they knew that he would bring that out. Now, people say, listen, the South started the war by firing on Fort Sumter.
Oh, please.
What people don't realize is that was in mid-April, 1861. And the leaders of the Confederacy had since the previous January been telling the federal forces, you must leave Fort Sumter because it is part of South Carolina. We have seceded from the Union. We are a different country now. You are trespassing on the land of a foreign power. Right. And the Union government steadfastly refused to evacuate those troops from occupying the territory of what in effect was a foreign country. And it was Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, who caused the Civil War, because he refused under any circumstances for the Union forces to abandon Fort Sumter. And so when the Confederates finally said, you have to leave, because if you don't, what will happen is this, that we will admit then that, oh, our attempt to form an independent society, independent country, is a failure. And so you must leave. You are trespassers. You are now the enemy of this new state, and that's how that war started. That was a terrific precedent. From that point on, Jeff, the Constitution of the United States was a dead letter. It meant nothing after that.
Wow.
And all of the constitutionalists since then realized that it has no effect. The Constitution is non-existent. It ceased to exist from the time of Fort Sumter on. Fort Sumter was another turning point, because until the Confederate forces fired on Fort Sumter, the vast majority of American people didn't really care about the argument developing. They certainly didn't care to the point where there would be arms fought against each other. But by firing on Fort Sumter, it was presented in the Union press that this was aggression, that the Confederacy was waging war against the Union and was trying to overthrow the United States. And that completely changed the public opinion, brought it around. It was, in effect, a kind of a false flag. It was misrepresented as being naked aggression, when in fact the South was trying to make the point that they were a different nation. Now, they were no longer associated with the United States. They're their own confederacy, and that they needed to affirm their independence in the only way that could be done.
Probably the first major example of a media victory over reality. The media in that war played a giant role. Go ahead.
And you're absolutely right, and that's why the firing of Fort Sumter is so crucial to what's happened to us. Because since then, the enemies of America have realized that you can transform public opinion, which is completely against the wishes that you might want to have, by creating an incident. And what happened? What was the next one that took place? It was on February 15th, 1898, is when the Maine was blown up. And it was presented in the press, the Hearst press, that the Spanish had blown up the Maine and had killed 260 American sailors. Right. That had also transformed American public opinion to total outrage against Spain, even though it was proved that there was no Spanish espionage whatsoever. The Spanish would have never been as stupid enough as to try to blow up an American battleship. But that event caused the Spanish-American War, because the wealthy industrialists wanted to own Cuba. And so the best way to own it is by presenting yourself as a liberator. And that's what happened. The Maine was the second of these events. The ones that followed were the Lusitania, which has now turned out to be that the Lusitania was not an innocent passenger ship, that it was a gunboat. It was running illicit arms from a so-called neutral power, the United States, to a hostile power, England. And so the loss of the Lusitania was presented as a German satanic energies let loose on the seas, and that helped to bring America into World War One. Again, emotionally engineering people through these terrible incidents. Then came Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor only took place because the United States had put an economic stranglehold on the Japanese through an oil embargo. And when that oil embargo was enforced in September 1941, the Japanese realized that if this embargo continues to go on, that their entire society would grind to a halt, would be bankrupt within the space of about a year and a half or 2 years, could not survive this. But when Pearl Harbor came along, was there any explanation that it was because we had goaded the Japanese, we had given them a situation where they had to either attack us or else face inevitable internal destruction? No, none of that was discussed at all. And then the Gulf of Tonkin came along, where supposedly an American a military vessel, a warship, was viciously attacked by the Viet Cong in the Gulf of Tonkin. And it was this outrage, again, that the American people felt because there were injuries and an affront to the flag that got us involved in the Vietnam War. And that Gulf of Tonkin resolution turned out to be a non-existent event. It did not happen.
Right.
And yet the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, Congress gave Lyndon Baines Johnson the power to conduct unlimited war. They turned over their own rights. The Constitution right of Congress is that only Congress has the right to declare war, not the president. But they abrogated that completely and turned over their own congressional right to the president to wage war, in which over 58,000 Americans died needlessly for no reason whatsoever and no victory. And it's continued on with 9/11. The COVID-19 scare. These are events to manipulate public opinion. And it all began with Fort Sumter back in April of 1861.
Unreal. Hold on just a minute. We'll take a little pause and come right back and carry on. Frank Joseph, as we look at the truth of World War II. Next. Okay, welcome back. I hope you're all enjoying and learning from this wonderful hour with Frank Joseph, and you should get his book, Turning Points of World War II. It's look under his name and guess. It's right there. This is a very important lesson. Free history, real history, no joke. And just the lies and the media, the control they wield over the masses is still to this moment not understood by probably 95% of the people. They don't understand. Every time they look at the screen, every time they look at some program or some programming, they're looking at fake reality or skewed reality. It's not reality. So their reality is electronic. It's digitally created. And they're in trouble. And that's the majority of Americans. And most of the Western world is living in a corrupt media-dominated malignancy. It's awful. Anyway, go ahead, Frank, please.
Well, after the Civil War, the most crucial turning point that America went through was its involvement in World War II. There was absolutely no reason for the United States to have been involved. As I brought out earlier, it was the economic strangulation of Japan that was the backdoor to war that got us involved. What's interesting is that if we had not been involved... Go ahead, yes.
How about Charles Lindbergh and the German-American Bund here? And the 50,000 people, I don't know how many, they were event after event after event. Americans didn't want anything to do with World War II. Nothing.
No, just like they didn't want to have anything to do with the Civil War either, just like they wanted to have nothing to do with the Spanish-American War, just like they wanted to have nothing to do with World War I. But they were emotionally engineered by these incidents, which were either fake or, if they were real, were misinterpreted, misrepresented in such a way that it got people all emotionally stoked up and pointed in the right direction. That's the real tragedy of it. The great failure of American education is we do not raise our children to think for themselves. We only raise them to be good economic performers. That's it. To do unquestioning what authority tells you to do. And that's the tragedy, because if we could think for ourselves, you know, people like yourself, Jeff, they are rarities, unfortunately, because you think for yourself. That's what's brought you to these conclusions. That's what brought you to this realization of life, is because you can think for yourself. And, you know, God bless you, you can do that. But the vast majority of people do not think for themselves.
No.
And that's why they've been so betrayed. Our involvement in World War II, just look at it from this point of view. Let's say we had not been involved in World War II. Then no doubt the Soviet Union would have been trounced, would have been dismantled. That would have been the end of communism. And that at least would have saved us the deaths of 36,574 Americans who died in the Korean War, trying in a fruitless, wasted effort to defeat communism. We just crucified that country between the East and the West. And then in Vietnam, a few years later, we went to war supposedly against communism again, and the communists killed over 58,000 Americans. We would have saved those lives if we had not participated in just a few years before in World War II, because there would have been no communism if Hitler had been left alone to do what he was only interested in doing, which was dismantling this huge colossus in the East and making it possible for the European peoples to spread eastward and to relieve their population problems. There would have been no there would have been no communist China, no North Korean problems today if Hitler had been allowed to have his own way. The United States, in effect, went to war for only one real reason, and that was to solve the Depression. There was no way that America was finding its path out of the horrors of the Depression from 1929. We stumbled from one economic catastrophe to another, and the only thing that could fix it, and everybody knew this, the only way you could fix America's economy was to go on a war-based economy, because that stimulates the entire economic basis of the whole country. That's exactly what they did. Many people couldn't have cared less whether they were fighting Germany or England or anybody else. The only thing was to get the country going economically again by getting it on a war footing. And that's exactly what happened. But by doing that, we had to make a deal with the devil. And that's just what Roosevelt did. He made a deal with the worst devil in all history, was Joseph Stalin. And we saved him. We saved that communist colossus, and we are suffering from that to this day. Because the Marxism that has affected the entire West has been growing like a disease, like a fatal illness for the last 70 or 80 years, until now it's got to the point where we have drag queens in teaching our children in grammar school. I don't want to elaborate all of the horrific effects.
They're getting ready to roll out manuals and guidebooks now for 4-year-old children to masturbate. This is Chelsea Clinton, Hillary Clinton. This is what we've got. This country has been invaded by geopolitical, absolutely fatal forms of communism. It's metastasized.
It's fatal.
Think of it as a disease. It's metastasized all through our country. We no longer have a government here. What in Washington, D.C. is worth our time? I can't think of anything.
Well, that's a very good word that you use, metastasize, because that's it. This is what we are seeing now, are the effects or the symptoms of a disease we've had for a long time. The goal of communism today, Marxism, whatever you want to call it, political correctness, is the same that it has always been from the time of Karl Marx, probably all the way back to the Old Testament. And that goal is to totally destroy civilization, totally destroy it. And the reason why they want to totally destroy it is so they can totally remake it over in their own image. They realize that the only way to achieve the Marxist world state, the global empire, is when civilization has been absolutely reduced to ashes. Then they can rebuild things the way they want. And that's exactly what is taking place. That's why all these horrific things that you mentioned, and the drag queens and the kindergarten, this is all deliberate destruction. And none of this would have happened if we had not been involved in World War II. That would have been the end of it. It would have been squashed. It would have been extirpated. But because we got involved, we made a deal with the devil to save our economy, now we've unloosed that same poison in our own country.
Right.
The other turning point, there are two more. I don't know if I have time to mention them. I'll mention them in passing here. The other one was the most disastrous presidency we have ever had. People talk today about Biden being the worst president of the United States. No, he isn't. The worst one was Lyndon Baines Johnson. And I'm not going to go in for all of his crimes. He was his crimes were of a monumental nature. Long before him, there was something called the Immigration Act of 1924. Ironically enough, it was called the Johnson-Reed Act. And the Immigration Act of 1924 was to specify that the only people that could become citizens of the United States, or they're immigrating from outside, they had to be literate. They had to be able to read in American English. They had to have language skills. They had to be fluent in our language, and they also had to have some employment skills. Those are all the basic qualifications. That Immigration Act was in effect to make sure that the people that were coming to our country would develop into Americans we could be proud to call our own. They had to at least speak the language. They had to be fluent in it, and they had to have some productive skills, whatever they were. All that was thrown out by the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, thanks to Lyndon Baines Johnson. And that Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 had set the tone, opened the doors for immigration the way we see it today. What everything that is happening now at the border, the South Bar that you mentioned, goes right back to LBJ signing that Immigration and Nationality Act of 1964 when he did away with the original Immigration Act of 1924. That was America's death knell. He opened the gates to people that are unqualified, is to put it as mild as possible.
Right.
That was a real turning point. Nations do not survive things that are taking place now at the border, and will take place. We're going to be pushed right to the edge of extinction, thanks to LBJ having done that. I know we have a little time left. I won't talk much more, but the final...
Go ahead. That's very important. It's hard to hang words that are potent enough on that evil sack of crap. LBJ, that evil, vile man, horrible.
We've had some terrible presidents, but none can compare to the damage that this man has done. We could have an entire show on him, but it would be a very dark subject. I mentioned earlier how he was able to literally coerce the U.S. Congress into voting him overwhelming power to wage war on his own whim. That is how the Vietnam War started, through the Gulf of Tonkin. I mean, that was the surrender of Congress. Congress is just like the Constitution now, just a dead letter, just a faint ghost of something that used to be. Well, the final thing is, turning point was something far more recent. That was in 1997. When something called the Project for the New American Century was installed. And this was a think tank based in Washington, D.C., and it was the most powerful collection of individuals in the United States at that time. And it focused on the United States foreign policy. It was founded by, no surprise, William Kristol and Robert Kagan and others of his ilk, other Zionists of his ilk that formed this. And what this, the stated goal of the Project for the New American Century was, quote, to promote American global leadership. Quote, our view has been adopted. We have no choice but to reinstill in our foes and friends, this is what they're saying, the fear that attaches to any great power. The United States should adopt a stance of benevolence, global homogeny. We should challenge regimes hostile to our interests and values. Well, we know what those interests and values are, don't we? Yeah. And preserve and extend, quote, an international order friendly to our security, our prosperity, and our principles. In other words, What this all means is that the Project for a New American Century was the institution of a global society, a global plutocracy. And that is, explains why we are doing things in the Ukraine. That explains why we don't have any allies anymore. We have vassal states that are in awe of us. This Project for the New American Century laid out how the American government now is not an American government. It is a global government. And it's only going to take the next few years to establish exactly all the things that they have always wanted. They're so close to it right now. And these, I think, were the big turning points. If the Project for the New American Century, if Mr. Kristol and Mr. Kagan had not been around, this would have never happened. What we're seeing here is really, I don't know how else to put it, we're seeing the institution of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. That's what we're really seeing. And for those of our listeners who are not familiar with that, I urge them to get a copy of it.
If you really want to know what's going on, read the protocols. They're online. I think you can read most of it online. It's not a long read. And
no.
Pay no attention to the efforts to discount it and claim it's a fraud. It really doesn't matter, because it's exactly precisely what has been done over the last, 100 plus years now?
That's right, because this is what they always have in mind.
It's all there.
Yeah.
It's all there. You will have no question marks any longer if you read the protocols, if your mind is open and ready for a new paradigm of understanding and wisdom. It's right there.
Well, what I hope I've been able to just outline very basically for our listeners is that there were these three major turning points in our history. The Civil War, which was the first and really the most catastrophic of them all. In World War II,
how many Americans died? By the way, quickly, how many Americans were slaughtered in the Civil War here? Most Americans have no idea. It's close to 700,000 dead, killed.
They don't know that, but ask them how many Jews died in World War II, and they know right away, don't they? What does that tell you? That you know, but you don't know how many Americans died in your own Civil War. But that you know about the Holocaust.
That's
what does that tell you? Because you're a bear.
Constant.
So it was the Civil War, I think, was our first and most catastrophic of all the turning points.
Yeah.
And then it was World War II, of course, which let loose all of this disease now from which we have a terminal suffering condition. Then there was LBJ and his Immigration and Nationality Act of 1964, which threw open the doors of immigration as we now know it today. And then finally there was the Project for the New American Century in 1997, which laid it all out. This is the global situation that they have planned for us, and that these are the four turning points that we need to understand. But we shouldn't just lament them. Now that we understand them, we see things more clearly. There must be some form of action that will arise, and it will. The more that people realize these things, that are not only our own lives are at stake, but the lives of our children, and even beyond that, the high ideals and concepts of our founding fathers in creating a truly free republic. All that is on the line, and what are you going to do about it? Let it go?
It is truly amazing. Everywhere I look, and I'm sure many of you listening understand that, even if you're living in another country, you probably have many of the same problems. It's called liberalism,
of course.
Socialism. Here, communism. Communism is literally everywhere now, and it's being given a free ride, a pass, by the mainstream media. Why? Because communism owns the mainstream media. So they'll do whatever they're told. It's nonstop programming and mind control over what's left of the American mass consciousness. It's just being beaten down. And I do hope, as you said, that somehow, some way, there'll be an opening or a window that will allow us to maybe make a move.
You know, I just refuse to believe that all of your wonderful radio programs and all the great books and so forth that are being produced now about these problems are for nothing. I think that we're part of a slow awakening. And once there is enough people that have awakened that truly understand what's at stake, the right thing will be done.
What's at stake is everything.
Everything. Everything.
That's it. All right. Excellent program. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you so much. I'm very grateful for the opportunity, and bless you for all your hard work for all this time.
Well, you bet. Thanks. Take good care. We'll talk next month. Okay.
Okay. Talk to you then. Right. Bye.
Frank Joseph. And look under his name, and you can get his book. Just a remarkable look at reality. That's the truth. All right. Back in a minute. Hang on.